Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. A quick heads up. The following episode contains a story about a personal experience with sexual assault. This content may be triggering for some listeners. Please take care of yourself while listening, and feel free to skip this episode if you need to. Hi, and welcome back to Rue. We love it when we get feedback from our audience, and we love it even more when one actually reaches out to us and wants to share a story because of something that we said in an episode that inspired her. So today we actually have a guest who contacted us after hearing our episode about the stigma that surrounds coming of age, puberty for South Asian women. She resonated with this episode and wanted to share something that she experienced surrounding this time, this sensitive time that we all go through as women. Because what she's sharing today is quite personal, she's going to be using the pseudonym Nina. So let's welcome Nina to the show. Thank you so much for coming on, Nina.
Thank you so much, Jyoti and Monica, for everything that you guys do. Like I told you, this podcast is really something that's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get here.
Yeah.
But it's something that's definitely filling a void in our community that, as you said, it helps people heal. And so thank you so much for allowing me to voice my experience on your platform.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what this is for. And I'm just so happy that you reached out to us and decided to share your story. So let's get into it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I was born and raised in the United States, but my family is from Punjab. My parents were born there and they came here. And, you know, I was raised in two very different cultures growing up, which is why I go back to your podcast, because I felt like that was something that we could really have used growing up, just listening to other people's experiences. You know, growing up, family members would say certain things like, oh, we don't do that. Our culture doesn't allow, you know, you to do X, Y, Z, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's to go out with friends or whatever. So I would tell my mom, when you grew up in India, you lived a very different life. Whatever your family told you, whatever norms and values your family shared in the four walls of your house, well, when you left the front door and you went to school, those same norms were shared by your neighbors and the people that you lived in India, which, you know, you can't blame parents or anybody because nobody thinks about these things. There's no transition as an immigrant child 101 from Punjab to India being taught in college.
Yeah.
Growing up here, the parents were still trying to hold on to their traditions. And I understand why. It was very scary
you know,
to come to a new country and not understand a lot of those traditions and to hold the value in our heritage. But the problem was that as soon as I can't speak for everybody else, I left the front door, I was smacked in the head with a completely different culture.
Yeah.
You know, how do you balance that?
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a tough time. And hence that story of where I thought I was dying because I got my period because...
Can I tell you, I was listening to that podcast while I was in the train and people probably thought I was crazy because I'm laughing and crying at the same time because, you know, everyone has that story that they can resonate with.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like moms, I guess, you know, at that time didn't know how to prepare us, right? And how to have this conversation. I mean, I know I didn't get a conversation. Did you?
So from the people who should have told us? Yeah. No, not at all. I was fortunate enough to have an older cousin that was going through the experience, and thank God she told us what, you know, what to expect. Mm-hmm. So when it happened, I knew what was going on. But it was so interesting because the day I got my period, the amount of unsolicited advice that I received and stories that I heard, you know, about their first day, which is nice too, but it's like, it's a lot, right?
Yeah, it's a lot to process.
But one of the things that, you know, you guys mentioned in your podcast, which stayed with me till this day, was I was walking outside the same day with, I believe, my mom. Yeah, my mom, and I think one of her friends were there too. And basically, I was told, you know, from now on, you have to, like, you know, be careful. Mundiando bachkiri, right? There's a song. I'm sorry. It's not meant to be funny, but, you know, una to du rena, hatni lorna, don't touch them, don't come, you know. And, I mean, I always knew that we were not supposed to get close to, you know, the opposite sex growing up, because that goes back to the whole cultural norm.
Yeah.
But when they said, okay, now you definitely cannot have contact with another boy, stay away from them, don't let them touch you, that's what sort of triggered me into, I mean, I asked this question, why now, right? Yeah. Like, why? I should have asked why, yeah, right? But I didn't, because I was just so numb from all this over information that my brain was just processing.
And not to mention all the hormonal changes, body changes, and everything else you're experiencing.
It was like going to work on the first day in a really busy place. And they're like, okay, here are the notes. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And I just jotted that down, you know, but I was young. I was 11 when I had my period as well, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And boys were not on my mind.
Yeah,
you know, maybe I thought some kid was cute, but they were not on my mind. So when they said what they said, like, stay away from boys, stay away from men, I didn't really, you know, care too much. It didn't interest me as much at that point.
But what did they say, what would happen if you touched a boy, or if a boy touched you?
So not outright, but I connected things. I knew that my period was there so that my body was changing so that I could have children.
That's what you were told?
Yes.
Okay.
I was told that, and I knew that from my cousin already, but that's that day, on that first day of the job, they told me that the reason why I get my period now is because women get their period, and that means that you can now have children.
Oh, okay.
They never explained how children
are made.
Yeah. You know, I was even once told, watching a Bollywood movie, when I saw two people kissing, I asked my mom, I was like, Mom, are they kissing? And she said, no, they wear special cream. So they're, I'm not joking. Okay, so they wear special cream so their lips actually don't touch.
Okay.
And you know, so that's the conversation we had about having children, the birds and the bees, and sex. There was no conversation, right? Yeah. Even when you watched a movie and there was a sex scene on, everyone would just look away. And you would fast forward it or something. But I knew that biologically I could have children.
Okay.
And I knew that young people could have children because, you know, I would hear about the previous generations having kids. People would just say, oh, yo no meto 14 sal di si me con dos baches sigue, right? Yeah. So I knew that that could happen. So when they said to don't touch boys, I equated that to, okay, if they touch me,
you're going to be pregnant.
I'm going to be pregnant. I don't think it registered in my brain at that moment, but that was the internal memo that I was processing bit by bit.
Yeah, got it. I know that you have a story to share, which, as we mentioned before, is deeply personal, and it takes place shortly after you got your period. So can you tell us exactly, like, what happened?
So I was about 11, maybe 12, and I went for a sleepover at my cousin's house.
Okay. Now, was this like normal? You would normally just go to sleepovers?
Oh, yeah. We were very close. They would sleep over at our house. I would sleep over their house. It was a typical thing. And, you know, I think it was Christmas vacation.
Okay.
It was definitely winter, and I decided I was going to spend a few days at their house. Again, we were little. My cousins were younger than me.
Okay.
Just by a few years, not much, but We got along, and unfortunately, what happened was they had this man living with them. If you ask me how old he was, I can't tell you because at that age, everyone was old.
Everyone's old, yeah.
But if I had to pinpoint it, he was probably in his 30s.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know who he was. I don't know. I mean, I knew he lived with them. I've seen him before. He was living with them for, I want to say, at least a year, but my sense of time is off.
Okay.
But I knew who he was.
Yeah.
I knew he lived with them.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't related to them and he wasn't related to you.
He was certainly not related to me. I don't know if they had some sort of a relation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But he was just a guy that lived with them and worked with them.
Okay.
And so he was always there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember that particular day there was a party. It was somebody else's party.
Okay.
As I was sleeping over. So I kind of crashed somebody's party as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had a lot to drink and he was weird. Like, yeah. You know, his ick factor was definitely up there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, at 11, I don't think that I was mature enough to pick that up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're just navigating life at this point. Like, you're just, or not even life, adolescence.
Yeah, he always just kind of gave me, like, a weird, you know, feeling.
Yeah.
But nothing like where red flags were going, you know, off, like, stay away from this man.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, he definitely had enough to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, nothing happened. So my cousins and I, we wanted to keep the party going that night. We were probably high off of ice cream.
Yeah.
And all the sugar rush. And we decided we were going to camp out in the living room and we fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousins were sleeping right next to me. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up because I felt something.
Okay.
And I woke up to him sitting right next to me on the floor, and he had his hands on both of my breasts.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how long he was holding them.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I woke up to that, and before I could say something, he realized I woke up, and then he laid down next to me to try to sleep with, you know, to sleep next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically put me in an embrace and put his legs around my waist.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, "Idaraja." He said something.
Yeah.
And I panicked because I didn't know what was going on. All I knew was that I needed to get away.
Yeah.
So I just said, I have to go to the bathroom. And I rushed into their bathroom and I locked myself in.
He let you go? Like,
he
easily?
Let me go.
Okay.
He let me go because I didn't scream. I didn't yell. I didn't do anything. I'm not saying what I did was right, but
you were in shock.
I said, I just need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I walked away. And I gave myself, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes to gather my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
If you can even call them gathering. It was just like, you know, like a bomb goes off and you see it on TV where there's just like the sound in your ears and you don't know what's going on. So I just couldn't believe that that was happening to me. And so I went out of the bathroom. I went back and he was still sitting there. And I said, I need to go to sleep. And he goes, Aja japi palie. And I pushed him away, and then I went back to sleep.
In the same room?
Same room. I went back to sleep. I laid down. I can't remember if I stayed up for half an hour. I can't tell you. I don't remember.
Yeah.
All I remember is I pushed him away after he said, Aja japi palie, and I was like, get away. I mean, I didn't say anything. I just pushed him away. I said, no. And I said, I'm tired. I need to go to sleep.
Okay.
So the next day I woke up, nothing happened after. You know?
Okay. So you didn't feel anything after you? Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank God for that.
Thank God for that. The next day I woke up and it took time to process.
Yeah.
What happened?
You're 11 years old. You're at your cousin's house and this man just, you know, took all these liberties with you. And, you know, obviously you're wondering like what the heck just happened. Did you think at that point to share it with someone?
God, no.
No?
No. I did not share that story for at least a few years with some of my cousins. I kept it to myself.
Why is that, you think?
There's so many reasons. I mean, number one, the shame of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go up to a grown-up, you know, back in that day, maybe today's different, you know?
Yeah.
How do you go up to a grown-up and talk about your breasts being touched? The shame, the guilt.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that it was my fault. My biggest concern at that time was that if I told people what happened, I myself would get in trouble.
Mm.
I can't tell you why I would get in trouble, but that was my understanding. I had it set in my mind, if I told anyone, number one, I knew there was going to be a fight.
Yeah.
I knew that, yeah. Right? But I also felt like people were going to blame me and I was going to be in trouble and I would probably never be allowed to go anywhere ever again. And I knew that they would, you know, put
restrictions.
To protect me, they would put those restrictions.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, a big reason. And I didn't expect, you know, anyone, if I even spoke about it, that I was going to have a conversation. Are you okay? It was going to be yelling and screaming. And and I wasn't ready for that. I was.
You were trying to protect yourself again.
I am. That's just who I am. Yeah. I internally process my own problems, mm-hmm. you know, but. And that was one of them. I had to do it, but I did it by myself. I did not speak to anybody about that story, but a lot of it was really shame.
Yeah. And, you know, I often wonder, why do we feel the shame? We're the ones who are wronged, right? It's someone else who does these inappropriate things. And yet, somehow, the way we're conditioned, we feel the guilt, we feel the blame, we feel ashamed. When really, you're just a kid and this guy is an adult and what he did was absolutely horrific, you know? And then you shared that before we got into this story, you shared that your idea was that if someone touches you, you're going to get pregnant. After this happened, did your thoughts go there?
100%. This is why I reached out to you. I thought I was pregnant for about 2 months.
Oh my gosh.
I thought that the act of him putting his legs around me was, I guess, sex. Because, you know, you would see that in Bollywood movies, you know, they don't actually show the act, obviously.
Yeah.
But I thought that what he had done was enough to impregnate me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know was that when you're pregnant, your period stops.
Yes, yes.
And for about a few weeks, I cried myself to sleep every night.
Oh my God.
I punched myself in the stomach so that I could, quote unquote, abort myself. You know, I did it all by myself. Like, you know, I didn't know. I just needed to survive.
Yeah.
But I wasn't convinced that I was actually pregnant, but I thought that I could be. I could be, yeah. Right? And because I didn't have that education.
Yeah. And you didn't want to take any chances that in case you were. So that's why you were hitting yourself on the stomach and trying to abort this baby if you were pregnant.
Exactly. And, you know, to go back, you said something. One of the other reasons why I felt like I was going to get in trouble is because before the sleepover, another relative of ours actually raised concern.
About this individual?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They said that I don't know what they exactly said about him, but the conversation was that, you know, I don't really trust him. Like, I don't like the way he looks or something.
Yeah.
And it was right around the time of my sleepover.
Okay.
So, and, you know, I'm the one that was usually always insisting on having the sleepover. So I felt like that would come back to be like, you see? I warned you, you see?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're still letting your child go to the sleepover.
Yeah.
And it would have been my fault.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. But you know, what I'm thinking is that we have a gut feeling for a reason. You know, a lot of times, you know, we question our gut feeling, but time and time again, I just feel like maybe we should listen to our gut feeling, or in this case, your relative's gut feeling. There's a reason, you know, you don't necessarily get that feeling about everybody. If you get that sense, then I think you have to go with it and just avoid that person at all costs. So when did you find out that you are not pregnant?
I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Well, you were 11, so you probably forgot about it at some point.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened because my stomach wasn't getting bigger.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there were some telltale signs. I was slowly getting over my trauma.
Yeah.
You know, which was hard. So I don't remember, honestly, Jyoti, when I said to myself, oh, okay, thank God I'm not pregnant. But it, thank God, went away on its on its own. Yeah. Maybe I learned something as time went on, right? Yeah. But yeah. After like 3 months, you know, there was my stomach was still very flat. So
yeah. So while you were going through these emotions and you were feeling, you know, upset, obviously, crying yourself to sleep every night, did anyone in the family notice that you weren't your usual self?
No, I do a very good job at hiding it. I only, you know, let my emotions come out when I was alone at night sleeping in my own bed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm thankful now, but no, nobody noticed.
Mm. So how did this experience and the secret that you were carrying affect you in the long run? Like, did it change how you saw yourself or your body or how you navigated relationships and friendships, like in the years that followed?
So, you know, one of the things that happened was I had a momentary lapse of trust for all men,
mm-hmm.
including my own father.
Mm.
And whenever I would see my dad, I would get nervous, even though my dad is a great dad and would never, ever in a million years do anything like that.
Yeah.
But when I was going through what I was going through, it was trauma. And I remember when I would see him, I would make sure I wasn't alone with him.
Mm.
And, you know, but again, over time, it healed. And I don't want to say that what happened to me was like little, and it was. Many people, thank God, it didn't get worse.
Yeah, it didn't escalate. Right? Yeah.
It didn't escalate. And so it happened.
Yeah.
It could have been way worse.
Mm-hmm. And it is way worse for a lot of women out there, a lot of young girls, unfortunately. But I think, you know, just talking about it and, you know, if we can learn something from this, from your story, the hope is that we can equip girls and maybe moms who are listening to this to be able to handle themselves and see the signs and listen to their gut feeling or their relative's gut feeling.
I agree. I mean, you know, there's going to be people out there that are going to have these weird, but definitely go with your own gut feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not about to get all scientific on you, but that's probably like, you know, evolution over time.
It is. It is. Yeah.
To say there's something off about this person. And if there is, and if it's something that's avoidable, like I'm not going to send my child to a sleepover because that person gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
Better to be that crazy lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
Than have this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a vulnerable age when you're going through like puberty and you're just figuring things out and for something like this to happen. And it's sad that you, even if it was momentarily, lost trust in your own father. You know, like these things have these effects on us. Sometimes we don't even realize how far reaching and how long they can last. I'm glad that you were able to, you know, get over this trauma and eventually like learn to trust your dad again. So was there anything you recall doing that helped you process this trauma and eventually find some sort of healing?
So I think the first time when I was able to move on from this trauma was when I finally had the guts to tell one of my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a cousin whose house this was a sleepover with.
Yeah.
She was very close to me. And I just remember telling her what happened. And she just listened.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I could trust her.
Yeah.
And it felt a relief. I put the burden on her now.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt a relief. It was definitely a relief that someone else knows.
Yeah.
And I don't have to process this. We didn't sit down and talk about our feelings or anything like that. It was just like, hey, I need to tell you that this is what happened to me.
Yeah.
I don't even remember most of the conversation, but I did tell her the story. And then another, like I would say 2 years later, I told my cousin.
Whose house you were at?
Yeah. I told my cousin you were sleeping 3 feet away from me.
When this happened.
My gosh. And, you know, I told my cousin.
Yeah.
And it was, again, there was no coming of the moment. There wasn't a conversation. But the more I got my story out, the more it just, you shed that because, you know,
Because you're not internalizing it any longer. You're right. Sort of, you have an outlet and you're choosing to share it with selected few that you trust. And there's honestly, there's healing power in being able to share. Like, you know how they say, if you share your happiness, it multiplies. If you share, you know, something that's making you sad, it's divided, right? So you feel less of it. So, you know, sometimes it's just being able to let it out and having a non-judgmental ear listening to it, right? So did you ever confront this person?
No, but if I saw him today, I would kick him in the balls.
Oh, gosh. I would do it with you. I would.
So I did see him a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
We were at a gurdwara.
Yeah.
There was somebody spoke. And I was walking around at the langar, and all of a sudden I came face to face with him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nobody. I mean, there was people in the background, but there was nobody with me, and he was alone. And I, you know, I wish he would have just walked away and pretended like I didn't exist. But he's, you know, he just asked me how I was doing.
Mm.
I don't remember what I said, but the feeling, that anxiety came back and I fled. And I never saw him again.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, he was deported back to India.
Oh, good riddance.
Yeah, I know. And he's psychologically not doing well.
Okay.
But...
So I can't say that I feel sorry for him.
No, not at all. I just, you know, I wish I had said something because God knows how many other children he may have inappropriately touched.
Yeah, yeah. You know, odds are that you were probably not the only one. And, you know, these men, if they feel that they can get away with it, they'll do it as long as it takes or as many times as they can before they get caught. And some never get caught.
Think about it. He had the nerve to do this in a living room out in the open with other people sleeping there.
Yeah.
I don't care how drunk you are.
Yeah.
Like that's a power move that either you're a psychopath or something. And so nothing is beyond their reach. If I could do it again, I would have screamed from the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
Screamed. I would have woken people up.
Yeah.
But 11-year-old me did not want that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to fight. You know, I think you and I once jokingly talked about the hero syndrome.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, which I don't know if you want me to talk about it right now. But, you know, there's a hero syndrome in all of this where as a victim, you want to be able to process things on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Your way. Maybe your way obviously doesn't make sense because you're going through trauma, but it's your trauma.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, a funny thing happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
My husband decided to be my hero one day.
Okay.
And there was an older neighbor that was just, he was just creepy, you know? I'm obviously an adult, I could take him. But, you know, he had this thing about him that he was sleazy. And I was walking on the street once and he made a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of said, what did you say to me? And then he blew me a kiss.
Oh, gosh.
And again, you know, I'm just annoyed. Nothing else. Just annoyed. And I came back to our house and I told my husband, I was like, God, he's so annoying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing my husband does is the hero decides, you know, he's upset, rightfully so.
Yeah.
You know, but he gets up and he goes, I'm going to have a word with him.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, I don't need you to do that. Please do not do this.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, this guy needs, someone needs to say something to him, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't need him to do that because I could do that by myself.
Yeah.
So he goes up to him and this guy, you know, obviously whatever my husband said to him, this guy has a cane, and now he's, like, swinging this cane at my husband.
Oh, my God.
And my husband grabs the cane to protect himself.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, you know, a passerby are seeing this?
Yeah.
This is not going to, you know, end well. And thank God, you know, they walked their separate ways. But now the other neighbors who have seen this, now they're asking, well, what happened?
Yeah.
And now you have to tell them the story, which I didn't really want to talk about. Or maybe I did. Who knows, right? But you took that.
But that choice was taken away from you.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, process it. You know, the hero syndrome, again, you want to protect me, but it should be a more of a, what can I do?
Yeah, like to be there to support you. And the other thing I was thinking is you've already lost control by this unwanted act happen, right? Like you had no control over that situation. And then you're wanting to process this, you're wanting to handle it your way. But then now, even though his heart's in the right place, your husband's taken that control away from you again.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And I think, you know, to those listening, sometimes we don't want you to do anything. We just want you to listen. There's therapeutic powers in just listening to your partner. And that's it. And letting the victim decide what it is that they want to do, how they want to handle the situation. Because you're right. We don't necessarily need men to fight every battle for us.
Yeah, and it's not just men, it's anyone. You know, I'm sure if you came to me and told me something like this happened to you,
yeah,
I'm going to turn into hero mode too.
That's true.
You know, and it's just because it's out of love.
Yeah.
Right? But that's sometimes, like you said, you lose that control again.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go kick somebody's butt, just do it quietly.
Yeah.
you know, like, I'm just going to go out to Starbucks. I'll be right back.
Yeah. No need to make a production out of it. So I want to ask you, you're sharing this story, right, on a podcast for South Asian women. Like, how do you feel our community's like general silence or lack of open conversation around these topics? How does this contribute to like your overall experience and feelings of isolation?
If someone had sat me down and just spent 30 seconds to tell me about my anatomy and the biology.
Yeah.
I would not have gone through the second part of my trauma.
Yeah.
Which was not knowing what was going on with my body, which was nothing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I felt like that was more traumatic than the event itself.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh my God, I might be pregnant. Can you imagine the shame I'm going to bring to my family? I'm not going to be able to go to school. Mm-hmm. You know, so in my opinion, I get it. We don't want to talk about it. You know, sex and sex ed is a taboo, not only just for South Asian people. It's a taboo everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I have children and I need to speak to them about all of this too. And I'm still trying to find, I'm sure ChatGPT will tell me how to do it. But,
you know,
if we take that time, you're not, I think there's a misconception that if you gave all of this knowledge
girls or boys are going to go out and engage in the act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's not true.
You're
actually empowering them with knowledge so they know what's happening. Someone's going to say, oh, well, if we told them everything, then they'll try to, you know, go around it or, you know. No, they need to know everything. And then you have to trust your child and trust the upbringing to see that they're going to make the right choices.
Exactly.
If you leave them with, it's like a plane is crashing and all of a sudden you're like, okay, fly it now.
Yeah.
I just felt like speaking to people, we really need to stop suppressing the most natural thing.
Yeah.
You're born, I'm born, our kids are born.
Yeah.
Okay, how does it happen? You know, there's no cream for the lips.
Yeah.
Okay. I only found that out last year. Just kidding. I'm kidding. But, it's just you have to talk to them about this. It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But if that had happened, then, you know, you could share the story and be able to speak to people. And I feel like, you know, if the family dynamic was more open to let's talk, and if anything ever happens, it's not your fault. You know, things that we say to our kids, if anyone touches you, you tell me.
Yeah.
There's no conversation to be had because it's a generational gap thing.
It is. And I just think that if there's one thing that I would just reiterate over and over and over and over again, especially to, you know, moms who have girls, is let your girls know it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. Because I think that's a narrative that we have been brought up with for so long that it's inherent in us to automatically think that we brought this upon ourselves, that it's somehow it's our fault and we're ashamed. And this is something that not just in your story, in a lot of stories and a lot of experiences that we hear, we just automatically assume it's our fault. It's not.
That's society. You know, you hear, oh, someone was raped. The first thing you're going to say is, well, why was she walking around alone at 4 a.m.? No.
Oh, yeah. Or what was she wearing?
What was she wearing? No, I'm sorry. 4 a.m., the world should be in a way that she should feel comfortable walking at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
It's the other person, right?
Exactly.
Are you not able to control your urges?
Yeah.
That it's always the woman's fault? Yeah. Are we that weak? Or, you know, guys, come on.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, this is a story that I know you mentioned you've shared it with some of your cousins, but you've never told your family this story. Why is it so important for you to share it with our listeners today? Like, what do you hope that others will take away from your story?
Just like you triggered me,
yeah,
with your story, it was just so nice to hear other people's perspectives. And I said, okay, I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
You know, when this happened. And I you know, if we had podcasts or safe space to discuss these things,
yeah,
I think that maybe the trauma would have been easier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe I would have felt like I can go to somebody and have a conversation, or maybe the parent or an adult in my life would have said, you know what, maybe I need to speak to her. Maybe she is off. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as I heard that story, I messaged you and I said, I have a story to tell you because I hope I didn't trigger a lot of people, but I just hope that we can have this conversation.
Yes.
Moving forward.
Yeah. And again, I'd like to remind the listeners, like, this is a safe space. You don't have to share your identity if you choose not to, but it's just a space where you can, you know, talk about these things. And I think a lot of times you end up validating others' feelings. Who knows how many girls out there had this sort of experience? You know, I'd like to think not many, but unfortunately, the reality is probably a lot.
Yep.
And if they're out there thinking it was their fault, it's not. So Nina, we'd like to thank you for coming on and sharing this experience with us. I know it wasn't easy for you. I just want to ask you, what do you think the key takeaway, like the golden biscuit from this episode, should be?
I think it's that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that education is so important.
Yeah.
But you're definitely not alone.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's a powerful message to send out there. You know, if you're going through something, you are not alone. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening to Rue. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at ruhdaraz@gmail.com. That's ruhdaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.